You guys have no idea how challenging it is to put a presentation together where you talk about consistent cash flow in front of a room full of people that want to do 20, 30, 50, 100 baggers like Eric was talking about this morning. But I'm grateful to be here. Love hanging around with guys like yourselves. I get to learn and stretch and grow. And thanks for calling and Sean for putting this event together and invite me. A few of you guys in the room have gotten my newsletter emailed out a couple weeks ago where I talked about two of the books that had the biggest impact in my life in terms of business, taxes, government, investing. One of them was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. The other one was G. Edward Griffin's Creature from Jekyll Island. I mean, you talk about connecting the dots for me, and so I'm just honored to be in the same room in Jekyll Island as G. Edward Griffin today. So my quote that I came up with here a few months ago, within the last year, has been popular in some circles, financial radio shows, and have been picked up, so I actually am in the process of getting a trademark, but I know that I don't have to explain that one to you guys. So I'm in a warm audience on that one. There we go. So my friend Jim Rogers taught me a lot about investing in commodities. And as I remember quite a few years ago, I was reading his book, Hot Commodities. And he taught me about how you can figure out the cost of a commodity. And then when you see the commodity going down, dropping down to the price, to where the price reaches less than the cost to produce it, that you should become a buyer at some point in those type of situations. So I used his strategy, the building on the left there. I've owned multiple businesses, and the building on the left there is our family business. And there was this product, it's for those of you familiar with the building industry, we use a lot of OSB. It's like a plywood product, and we use a lot of it, and we're shipping buildings all over the country. And I remember seeing the price of OSB slide from $12 to $11 to $10 to $5, you know, all the way down to $5. And I used the information that I learned from Jim Rogers to, at that point, jump in. And our building was overflowing with OSB. We bought just like 50 truckloads of the stuff, and we were storing it outside. And then within 2 years, it went back up to $14. And so that was where I created that was kind of the first kind of addiction that I got to in investing in the commodity space, and sort of captured my interest ever since. So after creating several very successful businesses, and we're in the modular business back home, and we're shipping buildings all over the country and even internationally, I was also doing some private money lending. I was flipping houses and doing some short-term capital gain stuff and having just a whole ton of fun. But I got to the point where one year I get the call from my CPA on April the 13th saying that even after we did we took the depreciation on whatever we could, and you've paid your quarterlies, you still owe, in 2 days from now, you still owe several hundred thousand dollars. And it just became not so much fun anymore. I was taught from the time I was just a kid that when you make a lot of money, you have to pay a lot of tax. And so I believed that that was true. Even my CPA at the time was in that camp. Right? You just got to pay your dues. So when Robert Kiyosaki talked about making millions of dollars a year and not paying any tax, it drove me crazy. I was like, what in the world is he talking about? And I didn't think it could be done. But when I changed the question became, how can I? At that point, the world opened up to me. I was able to crack the code, and it happened by getting around him and his team. It happened by getting around great mentors. I mean, I love getting around mentors. There's a lot of white hair in this room, and I love Look at this. You've got a bunch of guys a lot older than me, some of them no hair. I love getting around folks like that that I can learn from and pick their brain and try to figure out how I can advance and use what they've learned to head in the direction I want to go. So a lot of you guys have seen charts like this, hopefully not too many of them in your portfolio, but you know, to a lot of us that looks like opportunity. You know, it looks like the point where you get into the commodity space where you know that at some point it's going to turn, and it was sort of what happened to me in the OSB when I bought all the OSB. It turned and it went back up, and that is really exciting. There's nothing as boring as a 250 unit apartment building with a 30-year mortgage, 10, 12 years fixed, and it just churns out cash every month. I actually have disciplined myself to not go all in and be 100%, because look, I love the thought of buying a whole pile of stock at 25 cents and watching it go up to 3, 4, 5, 10 bucks. I mean, who doesn't like that? But I want to sleep at night. My wife and I have been married. We've been married for almost 20 years, 20 years in December, and we live in a really nice house on 22 acres, and we want to keep living in that house. And so I got to discipline myself to invest for cash flow and not go all in on, you know, chasing companies or investments that with the hopes of big gains. So we're going to talk about steady, consistent cash flow. We're going to talk about how you can keep that money, use depreciation to get tax-free cash flow, and we're going to talk about diversification. So cash flow you can depend on, and we're also going to talk about some deal flow and how you can put some of that. One of the things that I'm most involved in right now is, and have been for the last most of the last decade, is I started doing this for myself. I started building a portfolio. It was coming out of the Great Recession. I wanted to build something that would withstand another correction. And I did that for myself till I ended up running out of my own cash. There were still deals. There were still great deals in the market. So I started reaching out to family and friends saying, hey, look, we got a deal that's going to, you know, return X amount of cash flow. Do you want to play? And it grew organically from there. We're going to talk about investing for cash flow, tax sheltered assets professionally managed, and leveraging the efforts of others. I mean, really what you're doing when you invest in the right kind of real estate, you are you're leveraging the efforts of others. Somebody's going to work, they're going to work all day, they're coming back at night, and you're getting 30% of their paycheck. And then infinite returns. Infinite returns is when you buy a multifamily building, you take the market appreciation plus maybe some forced appreciation. When you added value to the building, you can go back to the bank and say, okay, we bought this building for $1 million and now appraise it for $1.5 million. You can get the property reappraised. You can pull out your original capital and go with non-recourse debt. And it's a really good way to get into an asset like this where you've got none of your own money in the deal anymore. So my four rules for successful investing, and this has changed my life. This is the four rules that I live by in investing. So knowing who I am as an investor, knowing what's important to me is critical. You know, I used to, you know, I was one, I'm an optimist. I believe that opportunities are only for optimists. If they were for pessimists, they'd call them pessitunities. So, you know, I'd see a deal, any kind of a deal, and it looked like there was gold there. I mean, it's just like, man, this just looks golden. But when you get really clear on what you want and what's important to me, what was important to me? And what was important to me was building additional cash flow streams, and I had a tax problem. So I went after an asset class that got me what I wanted. I didn't go to San Francisco or San Diego and go to, you know, high appreciating markets that don't cash flow. I went back to my personal philosophy and started building a portfolio that fit what I needed. The second step is finding a market, and this applies more to real estate than probably anything, but finding a market that'll deliver, number one, personal investment philosophy. Third on the list is team, and this can apply to companies as you guys know. I mean, I would say that's, maybe that we should be moved up a notch or two there, but team, once I have the team in that marketplace, then I let them help me find the asset. And I mean, a lot of people do it just the opposite. They go find the asset, then they try to figure out who's going to manage it for you. Then you find out, well, it's not in the right part of the city. And as most of you know, the ones that look best on paper are the ones that normally are the hardest to keep occupied and stabilized. All right, here we go. I believe investing is a team sport. Most of the investing I do is with teams. We'll put a deal together, and I'll talk about this a little bit later, but I'll go out and find the asset. My team and I will go out and find the asset. We'll put the leverage on it. We'll get the financing. We'll guarantee the debt, and then we'll invite investment partners come alongside of us. So, local or not, and this has to do with working with great teams as well. There's a single family home that I bought back soon after 2009, and I ended up holding that property for probably 4 or 5 years. There was a six miles from my house. I was only at the property a couple of times. I had somebody do a little fix up for me. A tenant moved in, never met her. She was paying me $1,200 a month for several years until I sold the property, and I think almost doubled my money on the property. But the property on the right is about 1,000 miles from my place. And when I really stopped to think about it, the property on the left took more time and energy of my part than the property on the right. The property on the left brought in $1,200 a month. The property on the right brings in between $140,000 and $150,000 a month. So I was able to scale up without really exerting more time, attention, and energy, mainly because we got great teams on the ground. We're gonna talk about some of those teams. The guy on the right there is my team. He's on my team. He's my broker. He's the best broker in the city of Memphis. Him and his three-man team are involved in almost half the transactions in multifamily, 20 units or larger, and he's been finding some great deals. The guy on the left is my partner, who is also a property manager and is just very good at what he does. C and B class multifamily can be a tough animal to manage, and you gotta have the right team. We're heavily involved in the ATM space. And here's a partner of mine, we're gonna talk about this some more, but when I found out I can't be the expert at five different asset classes. So what I do is I'll go find the experts and I'll try and team up with them. What a lot of us has done this weekend by coming here, leveraging Sean and Collins' contacts and their deal flow and there we go. Resort investing. A bunch of you guys in the room were at the last event in Belize. These are great partners. We're the lead investor in the resort. We own, our investor side, we own about probably 25% of the resort. But there's great people involved here, and we all know that development is usually takes longer and it costs more. But the fact that these guys were able to do it in a foreign country makes it even harder. But the fact that they've been able to team up with Hilton, we opened on December 6th as a Hilton collection by Curio. And we also, part of the resort is exclusive to the Time Family's Coastal Living brand. So great partners, great people to do business with, and here are these guys. Anybody know these guys? probably if I would dedicate the next 5 years of my life, I could get pretty good at, in this space. But I was like, why not leverage, why not team up, why not, just why recreate the wheel? I've got a lot of other things going on, as I'm sure most of you in the room do. So just to be able to tap into these guys and get great deal flow, and not only the deal flow, but there's a bunch of guys in the room who I can't wait to connect with. You know, getting around guys like yourselves through the power of networking and the power of teaming up with the right people. So the winning formula, this is what I found works great for me. Team up with great people, come alongside and partner with them, find ways to add value, get around people smarter than me. That's so far been the easiest. Find problems and fix them. You know, most of these guys that I just showed you, the ATM guys, they signed up a massive portfolio of ATMs, and they came to me because they knew that I had a network of investors, and they had a problem, and we were able to jump in and solve that problem. Here's one of our properties. We do a lot of multifamily, and primarily in Memphis. We own a couple thousand units down there. Typically what we'll do is we'll syndicate properties. So this was a 373 unit building. We syndicated, the investors brought 25% of the equity plus some renovation money. Bank brought 75% of the debt. We purchased this property for $6 million. And I'll give you the little backstory on this property. It was pretty interesting. This property was owned by an out-of-state investor group. And this, we get access to these properties because of the quality of the team that we work with down there. And I told you about my broker, and we have a really good relationship with him. He's gotten us some great deals. This property appraised in August 2015 for $9.2 million. The owners, they invested more than $1 million in the property in 2015-16. We purchased the property about 7 months ago in March of 2017 for $6 million. We just got a signed LOI this week for just over $10 million in this property. It's not bad for a 7 or 8 month hold. So how's that for I know it's not a 50 bagger, but come on. All right, ATM investing. ATM investing, strong cash flow, great tax benefits. You got some diversification. It's totally passive, managed by a world-class management team. I'll show you the numbers and how they work. It's a 24.9% cash on cash return. You bring $104,000, buys you a unit. One unit is 7 machines. It's on a 5-year depreciation schedule, meaning that most of your income in those first 5 years is tax-free. Again, professionally managed, totally passive. You know what? Let me just back up here because I got something important to share on this one. So right now, we don't even have ATM units available, but we are putting a fund together. If some of you guys in the room have tax problems and you think that at the very end of the year you've got some unsolved tax problems, we are planning to, I'm like 95% sure that we're going to have a Section 179. Now this might not be familiar to the foreigners, but to the U.S. investors, it's a big deal. Section 179 means that you can take that whole investment and write it off in the first year. So 24.9% return turns into, if you're in the 40% tax bracket, can turn into a 65% return, meaning you get 65% of your capital back in the first year. So if you're interested, talk to me about that. We're going to have, cards dropped off at each one of your placemats during the break.
Is that year-end opportunity, the ATM thing?
Yes. So right at year-end, we actually started putting this fund together for ourselves. And because, as you can imagine, the guys that are putting the fund together typically would have tax problems. They don't get strategic. Last year, we opened up to my investors, and a bunch of investors came in. But right at the end of the year, if you're doing your tax planning, let's say you own a couple $100,000 in tax, or you want to really make a dent in your tax liability, could be a good strategy. So I'll talk just a little bit about Mahogany Bay Village and the opportunity that exists there. Again, this was where we had last year's Palisades event. In fact, a bunch of us sat right out here. It was right out about here. And it was like a board meeting without the boardroom tables and chairs. There was like 12 or 15 of us were sitting in like 2 foot of water. It was such a blast. We were going around the circle, and some of you guys were in that, and talking about investments and what works and what didn't. It was just a lot of fun. But that's our beach, and it goes along with the resort. The numbers, 10 to 12% return on investment on stabilization. This is like a pre-IPO. I mean, you got the chance to own a piece of Hilton before we open. And there's also a lot of built-in appreciation. Right now, you can buy a lot for $850,000 with three homes on it. And that lot is appraised by a third-party appraisal company for $1.4 million. There's a reason for that. There's no financing in the market. And there's no construction financing in the market. And there's also, you know, not a ton of people who've seen it. It's pre-open. Doors open to Hilton on December 6th. Infinite returns in less than 4 years. We're planning on, because of the appraisal that came in and because of the fact that Hilton's gonna, we feel, get that occupancy up quickly. We feel like within 4 years we'll be able to pull all of our investment capital back out of the deal and be an infinite return. This is an office park that we did earlier this year, 42 units. The deal, 9.3%. I'm just going to show you these. These deals are funded, but the reason I'm showing them to you is so you can kind of get a feel of what we're doing. And we've got other deals in the pipeline. We've got stuff that we're working on. So there's going to be deals in the future. But this deal, 9.3% return on investment. Immediately, this was unleveraged. So we bought it all cash. We financed, returned 43% of the investor's capital. Cash on cash return after the financing, this is after we got debt on it, is going to be in the double digits. And the plan is to refinance in 5 years or less and return all of the investor's capital. Now, when we return all of the investor's capital, it doesn't change anything on the ownership structure. If you own 10% of the deal, and we return all of your capital back, you still own 10% of the deal and you get 10% of the cash flow. Make sense? So this is another deal that we did. It's kind of unusual, but I was a fan of this guy and I read all his stuff and got on the phone with him one day and he told me about a problem that he had. This deal, this publisher was restricting his writing. He was restricting his content. And he was also taking a big chunk of the margin. So we were able to put $250,000 together, buy out the publisher. Now he can write whatever he wants to write. And now he increased his margin per book by, it went like from the publisher was getting $12.50 per book on a $20 book. And now they're getting like around $2 per book, between $2 and $3. We got a 1%, our investors got a 1% royalty on gross income for life. Nice little for you guys that like the royalty streams, and also a lifetime membership on any new products that he writes. This was a deal. It's a 66 home subdivision, 3 and 4 bedroom homes. We bought this property. I was on the front porch out here overlooking the pool yesterday when I got the email that we closed on it. So we just, as of yesterday, we own this property. 66 single family homes. We bought this for probably less than it costs for the infrastructure. Built in 2004, so they're only 13 years old, we paid $2.26 million for 66 single family homes. It is a long story how we got it to that point, but we're super excited about this property. The way it will perform is, this is what it's performing now. We feel like we can get it better than this. 8.2% cash on cash return, lots of appreciation built in, it's tax sheltered. We typically do what's called a cost segregation study so we can get you a lot of tax-free income. This is the kind of deal, and a lot of these are dependable monthly cash flow that you can count on. Here's a land deal that's alive. This is a deal that's alive today. We're getting ready to put this package together. It's gonna be a 20% return on investment, 70% loan to value. And it's a projected 12-month hold, and the investors get a first lien position on the land. So, questions quick. I know I only got one or two minutes? 1 minute, 1 or 2 minutes? Any questions?
I think the general perception in the room is that real estate's overpriced, and I think you probably share that, but you're still finding opportunity right now?
It is overpriced for the most part. we are being extremely picky, and the deal flow is not nearly as strong as what it was 2, 3, 4 years ago. But what we've found is if you can be in the right place, very similar to some of the deals that you've done, if you can be in the right place at the right time with cash, I mean, that's huge. This 66 single family home deal was, they were asking 2.97. We went into the bidding, it was sealed bids. We went into the best and final room with four other bidders. We were the lowest. It went under contract for 2.8 million. And it dropped out of contract because of financing. It came all the way down. They actually passed the next couple guys because they also had financing contingencies. Came all the way down to us at 2.26 million, and we were able to get the deal because we were at the right place at the right time with the cash. And that, you know, with the cash was a big deal there. So there's still opportunities. They're just harder to find. If you got cash, man, if you got cash and a great team and a broker that can vouch for you, saying, look, these guys went on our, they purchased, they went to closing on 20 of their last 20 deals that they went on our contract with, those two things, cash and a broker that can tell that story, is where you can get into some really good opportunities. Yeah.
Do you have like one or two big funds, or do you raise the money in like one-off
deals? One-off deals. Every deal is, every time we go out and raise money, it's deal specific. So it's not a fund. We create a separate company and then we go buy that asset with 10, 15, 20 investors. So typically when we put a deal together, it's based on a 75-25 split. 25% goes to the sponsor, the management team. So that's our fee for finding the deal, for putting the financing together, for signing on the note. It's another thing that's really important. You can invest in a deal like this, use leverage. I know, Eric, you mentioned leverage last night. I mean, the ultimate goal is to use some form of leverage on the front side and then roll into a non-recourse loan. So for that benefit, for the investor to come in and be able to get the benefit of levering your money up, we take 25% of the deal, you know, on the cash flow side. All right. Thank you, guys.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?